Tech Talk with Lee Star.
Good morning, Lee. How are you?
I'm okay, mate. Yourself?
I'm all right, mate. I just realised I thought I had saved this particular page.
Well, I have a solution for you.
Yeah?
Almost every browser has this thing. If you go to history in the file,
yeah.
in the menu, it'll say reopen last closed tab or reopen all windows from your last session.
Reopen last closed window, reopen all windows from last session.
And it might even have a recently closed thing. So Safari does, and Chrome certainly does things like that as well.
It's got recently closed.
And it should have a few other things in there. That might be the one that you recently closed.
Let me do reopen last tab. No. Didn't work. Damn. Never mind. I've got another question for you. Is it better to connect my internet? This is from Wendy, I might say. Is it better to connect my internet via Wi-Fi or cable? My son has a TV and computer connected to his modem with a blue cable.
Yep. So that's an Ethernet cable or basically a Cat 5 or Cat 6 cable, depending on what it is. It depends basically on your router, to be honest. It's difficult to answer that question. Cable is often faster. If you connect directly to cable and you have that connection, you have that ability to do it, then cable is often faster for your TV. But if your router, if your wireless router is relatively recent, it won't make a lot of difference. It's not as if you're downloading massively big bandwidth things to your TV. 4K media only requires a 25 megabit connection, so it's not necessarily going to be super faster. It can make a difference for gamers. If your son's a gamer and so he's got something plugged into like a PlayStation or an Xbox and a TV, that can make a difference. If your router is very old, then the cable will probably be faster. There are a few different types of that cable. There's one that's the color doesn't really tell you what it is, but if you look on the side of the cable, it will say things like Cat 5e or Cat 6. The Cat 6 is faster, the Cat 5e is a little bit slower, but still fast, and if it doesn't have that on the side, it's probably old Cat 5, and that means it's a little bit slower again. But it doesn't typically matter for most streaming these days. It can matter for computers, it can matter for if you ever decide to back up all your stuff in your house on a network-assisted storage, it's basically a hard drive in a box that stays on the entire time in your life. Those are better on cable because you're going to be transferring a lot of files, and file transfers tend to require the fastest and most stable connection possible, and wireless doesn't always factor that in because you're sharing it between a lot of other smaller devices like phones and tablets and even smart fridges and other things like that. Cable is more reliable if you're trying to get a persistent and consistent connection, but it doesn't matter a lot on a TV.
Okay, thank you for that. While you were answering that, I've worked out how to get my weather page back.
Did you go through the menu?
I went through a little arrow. If you click down, it goes weather, and bang, it's there. So I've got all my weather tabs up, and I can tell you that it's a darn hot day. But in different areas, like for example in Cobar at the moment, it's 23.8 degrees. It was hotter 2 hours ago in Cobar than it is now, and it's going to be an expected top, they say, of 34 degrees. Grafton, it's 27 degrees at the moment. In Coffs Harbour at the moment, 32.5 degrees.
It's 27 where I am in the Sutherland Shire.
Wow. But, I mean, Coffs Harbour's right on the coast. 32 degrees at 9 o'clock. It's going to be a hot one. I digress. George says, my wife has been dropping hints about wanting a coffee machine for Christmas. One of the topics she raises is that she wants it to be ready and hot when she wakes up. Is there a coffee machine that connects to Wi-Fi or that has some kind of timer that can be used to be ready when she wakes up in the morning? George, there are probably hundreds, are there not, mate?
There are loads. So there are two answers I've got for this. One's a crazy answer, and I remember writing this to the AFR several years ago. And the other one is a more normal answer. So the more normal answer is almost every machine is ready within about 30 seconds because they use this technology called a thermoblock, which basically heats up the water ridiculously quickly within about 20 or 30 seconds. So to say it's going to be ready when your wife wakes up is kind of an understatement. You get on, you touch what you want on the machine, and you've got your coffee about 30 seconds later. So every machine's like that. Some of the better ones typically, it really depends on how automatic you want it to be. If you want it to be Broccoli Automatic Dura probably has the best and easiest to use, simply because it's basically a simple matter of touching a touch screen and telling it what you want and having the milk and everything be tempered, and basically everything done exactly the way you need it to be. So your milk texturing's done, even if it's one of the alternate varieties, your beans are ground for you, and then everything's pressed. So they're like that. If you like a little bit of manual control still with it, the choice of either DeLonghi or Breville's probably where you go. I've got a DeLonghi one myself, and there's still a lot of automatic stuff. You don't have to you don't necessarily have to know how to grind the beans yourself or how to apply the right pressure. About the only manual thing is putting the porter filter in the head, basically putting it in there and letting it grind the beans so you can move it over to prep the coffee. So that's about the only manual stuff in there. You can dial in extra controls if you want. The crazy option to that, so almost any coffee machine will do that to you. There are Wi-Fi options. The Wi-Fi options tend to be closer to around the $1,500, $2,000 up. It doesn't give you a lot of control, I'll be completely honest. Wi-Fi in a coffee machine, the most it will tell you is usually to buy more coffee. Most of the Wi-Fi integration is basically just an app trying to advertise to you. Some of them will let you dial in controls like making the perfect recipe for yourself, but it's not a lot of control, but the majority of it's there. We found in the early days of testing Wi-Fi coffee machines that if you forgot to put the coffee, the mug under the spout, it would actually make the coffee for you without necessarily having it there. So Wi-Fi is not an automatic coffee cup that it's making you in the morning, just as a heads up. It's mostly an advertising mechanism or a diagnosis for repairs. But the crazy one is really crazy. The crazy one is basically a coffee alarm clock. And it's probably overpriced for what it is. It's a style of coffee that's called pour over coffee. So artisanal, very, very fancy. And basically you pour your coffee beans over water. That's how it works. And what this special alarm clock does is when it wakes up, it'll wake you up with the smell of coffee. So it actually starts, you prep your beans, you prep your water effectively, and it will start pouring it over a few minutes before the alarm is supposed to go off, and it will wake you up with the smell of coffee that you're ready to drink immediately. It's a very unusual device. Finding it in Australia is next to impossible. I'm fairly sure if you wanted to get this for your wife, you'd have to order it from Germany or Switzerland, but it does exist. So the two answers to your question are almost every coffee machine, so any coffee machine that costs pretty much over $500, will have a thermoblock that's instant. That you don't have to worry about that. Practically instant within 30 seconds. But if you want the more crazy option, that's about €600, and you can literally wake up with the smell of coffee that you're ready to drink afterwards.
George, failing that, get out of bed 5 minutes earlier than your wife and make her a coffee. For goodness sake, come on.
There was a Philips coffee machine years ago that actually had a fingerprint access, and you could buy it for the home. And how it worked was that you specifically mapped a coffee variety to your finger. And so if you wanted, for instance, you knew in the morning that you wanted a flat white, you'd map it to your thumb. If you knew you wanted a macchiato, you'd map it to your second finger, your forefinger, something like that. And it started to get to the point where people would test it out by saying, my wife knows what she wants, so she just has to touch it with the one finger, will do that. That sort of technology sounds really convenient in theory, but it's no different to really pressing a button in general. So when you weigh up your coffee machines, pretty much weigh up what you need it to do. Some of the more creative machines in the past couple of years can make cold brew as well. So perfect for summer days like this where it's incredibly hot and you're trying to work out how to get the best coffee to get yourself recaffeinated, cold coffee can be a really good option. So when you consider a coffee machine, look at beyond making, you know, the standard drinks, look at if it can do some of the more creative drinks like cold coffee, because during days like this, I'll tell you, it's a lifesaver.
Or, George, for a cold coffee, you could make a coffee and put cold milk in it out of the fridge. The other thing about, you mentioned the brand name Dura, which is J-U-R-A. I need to say, if you're looking at getting a Dura, George, The downside of a Dura coffee machine, and I don't know whether they have fixed this, but when they froth the milk, 9 times out of 10, if you like a hot coffee, you've got to stick it in the microwave because they just simply cannot get that milk really quite warm. It's been a problem for years. I don't know whether they've fixed it now. You may be able to tell me. They have, Lee. Have they fixed that problem?
My understanding is the recent ones use the magnetic technology that basically Nespresso invented, which you can find things. So, some of them use the pipe technology. Pipe should be fast enough by the time it pours. If it's got a magnetic system in it, it will be fast enough that the froth will start to break down more quickly. If you're spending over $2,000 on a coffee machine, and keep in mind that's about the normal price these days for a high-end coffee machine, between like $1,500 and up. If you're spending around that money, it should be fine. But you typically can also control these days how hot the milk gets as well. So it's not just controlling how hot the coffee is, but also how hot the milk is. So it should be fine on newer models. The only caveat I would say is a lot of people think when you buy a coffee machine that basically it'll take care of itself, it'll last forever. Coffee machines are the most fragile of devices next to printers. Printers, really finicky, break easily. Coffee machines, not far off the mark. So you be aware you'll still have to descale it at times, and it won't come with the stuff for that, and you'll have to probably get a repairman in every couple of years as well. Usually right after the warranty goes. Coffee machines are incredibly finicky, so they're known for having deviations and parts that don't work and just bits that change over time, usually because you have to read the manual. It's one of the few devices where even I, as a reviewer, have to read the manual to make sure I'm doing the right thing. So just be aware that if it's not getting the temperature right, it could be something as simple as its sensor is slightly off, and you may have to call a repairman, and that is actually normal use for a coffee machine. We're only at that point where, I guess, the fully commoditized and commercialized coffee machines, the inexpensive ones that are under $900, they typically don't need to do that because their parts are so simple and easy to design. Nespresso is your perfect example. Every cup is exactly the same, largely because the machinery is the same across all the models and the pods are engineered to always be the same. It's different from a standard cup of coffee and a more expensive coffee machine because all of their parts are unique and very, very fiddly.
I want to ask you a question about Alexa. Why is Alexa so useless in reference to asking commands? May I give you an example?
Please.
I, you know, as you would probably know from the years we've been talking, I live in a world of Siri, right? But
yep.
I have a series of fans. I've got four fans in my place, and it just won't work with the Apple Home app, so the HomeKit app. So I went and bought myself a cheap Echo thing I got a super-duper special at JB Hi-Fi. I paid $27 for the Echo Pop, right?
Yep.
And set it up. But the language that you have to use to turn the fan on and off, you know, you say, Alexa, turn lounge room fan on, it won't work. Alexa, turn lounge room fan off. It won't work. You physically have to say this. Hang on a tick. I had to make a note of it because it is so finicky. You have to say, Alexa, set the fan speed on the lounge room fan to 3, and that will turn it on. To turn it off, you have to say, Alexa, set the fan speed on the lounge room fan to off. That is the only way you'll get to turn the bloody fan on or off.
All right, so you're going to love me today, man. I've got a fix for you. Because one of the things I love doing as a technologist is actually, I think PR people like technologists doing this as well as tech reviewers. They send us stuff. We try to work out the solutions to do things so you don't have to say things like that. So you're right. Those are the technical commands. I presume you've got something like a Dyson for that?
No, it's an Aerotron fan, ceiling fan, right? An Aerotron ceiling fan. It's got a Wi-Fi component in the fan, and it only works through the Tuya app, T-U-Y-A.
All right, so it sounds like it's using the standard basic Alexa command system that pretty much any device can tap into. Okay, so here's what you do. You never use those commands unless you're programming a routine. I've got my daughter's room on the other side of this. It's actually her birthday today. So she's got lights and she's got a Dyson fan in there. And when it's winter, I've actually programmed a routine so it will turn the lights to pink to lower them as a nightlight, and it will turn the heater on in her room. And so what you do is you go into Alexa and you find the routine section. It's usually on, I think, around the settings app. I'm looking. I'll check my phone later on, but you'll find it's really easy. And what you create a routine. And what a routine is, it's a command that you can remember that's easy that pre-maps a bunch of other more complex settings. So you said before that your routine is something like turn the fan to 3 at low speed or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
In your routines, you say, it'll ask you what you want Alexa to say. It'll say, Alexa, turn the fan to in the living room to low at 3. And instead of saying that, you're saying, tell basically Alexa a different command. Your command that you'll map is something like, Alexa, turn the fan down, and it will say that other command in the system once it's mapped. So you don't have to say the complex one. You're saying the simple one. The simple one is kind of like a macro for your old style keyboard when you're working.
Okay, so I say, Alexa, turn on lounge room fan. But in Alexa routines, I create a routine whereby I say, Alexa, set the fan speed on the lounge room fan to 3.
Absolutely. And we can see some of this complexity again. Routines are rarely touched. They're actually really clever in some of the things you can do. For instance, if you have a home cinema or even just a TV that you want to do things for, you can actually set up these things called blind controllers. You can have those automatically lower. You can have the lights automatically lower. And you can basically set a home cinema routine, as an example, where you're stacking multiple routines after one, like one after the other. But you're saying one thing, you say, Alexa, home cinema mode, and it will do a whole bunch of things. So for my daughter, that example for winter, all it's doing is basically it's turning the smart light to pink, it's turning the Dyson on, it's turning the Dyson's temperature to a certain setting and turning it to night mode. So it's got 4 routines there, and at the same time it turns the rain on the Alexa speaker. So it's got 5 different settings stacked at once, and it has 2 triggers. It either gets triggered at 7 p.m. roughly in winter, or sometime proximity to sunset. And you can also trigger it using your voice. So you've got multiple options. You can schedule, you can use specific voice commands, and you can basically stack things. Routines, and they're available on both Alexa and Google speakers. They're just called different things. Routines and skills. It might be under routine, it might be under skill, depending on the device. Those are the things that allow you to stack multiple things together, so you don't have to say the complex things.
So if you want to have if you want to be able to say turn on the fan in the bedroom as opposed to the lounge room, you would have to set up another routine, would you not?
Correct. I mean, you could, for instance, you could set up another fan, turn on the fan in the bedroom, but you could also have a preset, turn the fan in the bedroom, and it would also say something like turn it up to 7. You could stack those two, for instance, and if you wanted to turn them off all around the house, you could actually have a routine that says turn off the fan here, turn off the fan here, and just say turn off every fan in the house. If that's your routine or your skill, that could actually trigger all of those at once as well.
There would be people listening to us saying, why don't you turn it off yourself, you lazy sod?
I mean, that's true.
Get off your bum and go and turn it off.
I mean, so I like some of the options that you can actually do this from any part of the house, but also smart controls are things that you can trigger from other things. So, for instance, if you know it's going to be hot outside and you've got the ability, if you've got a sensor around your house and you want it to trigger your AC automatically, you can actually have that sort of stuff happen. That's kind of the benefit of smart devices. If you have a lot of smart devices, you can make stuff just happen automatically. For instance, if my smart washing machine decides to finish up, it can send me a message to say it's ready to put outside. It can just tell me that when I'm out and about. There are smart fridges that can warn you of certain things. It's just really dependent on they're not right. You could get off your backside and do it yourself. But living in that smart world is knowing that if you're sitting on your couch, which you might be, and you want the ceiling fan to go on, and you just don't want to move, having your device do it for you when you've already got that speaker, it's totally logical. By the way, worth pointing out that if you've got Sonos speakers, they've got Alexa integrated, typically the new ones. So if you've got a Sonos soundbar, which you might have, you can also say it to that device as well.
Can you? It's happened. 9:25. Thank you, Michael. Michael says, Brent, you gave advice to George about the coffee machine and told him, just get out of bed and make your wife a cup of coffee. Why don't you follow your own advice and get off your ass on off the lounge and turn the fan on yourself? There you go. Didn't take long. Dear. I've got another question from someone. John says, please ask Lee, All Things Tech, if you can. Now, ask if you can about the hotspot on mobiles and why do they throttle it down, and are there apps that help with this? Are they okay to use? And is the apps that help with this okay to use, says John.
Okay, so your mobile device will automatically throttle connection because it's typically understood that for the past 10 years of mobile use, people don't like churning through mobile connections as quickly as possible. These days in Australia, we're quite lucky. Our bandwidth amounts are actually quite generous. It's not that way in every part of the world. You can turn it off. It's a setting on Android. It's a setting on iPhone. You can physically turn off the bandwidth limiter. It's not something you have to stick with. Some devices are more complex than others. A good example is built into Oppo phones. There's a little setting that will pretty much tell you when you've hit 2 gig and will pretty much stop it regardless of whether you're on mobile hotspot mode or not. You can override all of these. iPhone has a setting for it as well. The reason they're there is because a lot of people don't like chewing through loads of bandwidth. And if you tell a device it's on low bandwidth mode or even on mobile hotspot, if you don't tell the device that's hosting it, like phone, that's on low bandwidth mode, it will every app will basically chew through as much as humanly possible. Like if you're watching a TV show on your laptop or your tablet and you're sharing through hotspot mode, it'll just choose the highest connection possibly can, assuming you're on a standard Wi-Fi connection. If you don't want that, and you probably don't need it when you're on the go, that low bandwidth mode is helpful. But if you have loads of downloads and you're not worried about that, you can override it in settings. It's just built into the settings of your phone.
Look, I've asked lots of questions and we haven't talked about any topics and our time is just about up. So thank you for sending through the topics. Maybe we'll hold them over and talk about some of the topics next week. There is a new TV and you can buy a TV now in a briefcase if you so choose.
It's a water-resistant briefcase. It's a TV designed to carry with. It's called the LG Stand Lamy Go. It's probably one of the most unusual TVs you'll ever see. It's basically a TV to take to go. It's in a water-resistant suitcase. It's mostly made for camping, but it's also got a touchscreen in it. You can lay it flat and turn it into a board game system. You'll have a lot of old people in general saying, just bring a board game. Just bring a bloody board game camping. That's fair. And you could also probably bring an iPad instead of a $2,000 TV. But there are a lot of people who like that. My suggestion is, if you're going to go camping and you want to bring a TV, bring a small projector. They're better. They're probably more reliable. Bring a small projector and a sheet and then connect that up to your mobile hotspot. Turn off the hotspot protection mode
camping,
and download as much
camping.
As you can.
Camping, no TVs, no iPads, no phones. You're in the bush. You're getting back to nature.
We live in a different world, man. I can't go anywhere with it. My kids are going to expect to watch Disney if I go camping.
All right. What's your daughter's name? Who's having a birthday today?
Ellie. She turns 3 today.
Ellie, happy birthday, Ellie, from all of us to you. All right.
She'll love that.
Thanks, Lee. Good on you, mate. We'll catch up with you next week. Okay.
Talk next week. Happy to help.
See you, mate. Bye bye. There you go. And if you've got any questions for Lee, as you can tell, he likes answering questions. Even my questions. So if you've got any questions for Lee, please send them to us. You can do it 7 days a week. Send them to me via email. You go to the 2SM website. You look for the drop-down list of names. Send them to Brent Bultitude, and we will put them to Lee Stark each and every Sunday morning in the program. We shall. All right. Lee's got a website address, and it's a good website too. Lots of reviews. It is Picker, PICKR, picker.com.au.